Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to my show, Blessings with Selene. If this is your first time listening, I'm a bereaved mom who is now dedicating her life to helping those who are grieving. And you might ask yourself, why am I doing this? Well, I'm doing this because I learned many lessons during my own grief journey. And also because I meet people all the time who are still being affected by grief many, many years after their loss. The message that I bring is that when we lose someone we love, it leaves a void in our lives and in our hearts that will never be filled again. But this does not mean that we cannot function again for the rest of our lives, that our family members will be affected not just by their own grief, but also by how impaired we are with our grief, or that our working lives will be affected negatively, or our romantic relationships will fall apart. So what I bring to you is a message of hope. Hope that we can choose to use what we have learned from our experiences to heal ourselves first, and then later on, to make a difference in the world. I want to share with you about this past weekend. I was in Grand Rapids at the Body, Mind, Spirit Psychic Expo, and it was truly a wonderful experience to be surrounded by people who are taking steps to heal the world with their unique gifts. There were vendors selling crystals, psychics and mediums giving readings to people, and speakers sharing what they have learned about life with those attending the expo. And I was also there sharing about my book, Not Your Usual Grief Book, How to Heal While Connecting with Your Child Who Died. And I wanted to share this with the world. And I also was giving angel intuitive readings. Well, there were so many people wanting to receive readings from the angels, and inevitably, they came to me at the beginning of the session, and you could feel how worried and how tense they were, and they left feeling lighter, inspired, supported, and loved, because the energy of the angels is so pure, and it can be very transformative. So that is why it's such a joy for me to offer these readings to others and to help those who are suffering or grieving in this way. So this was my first psychic expo, and you can be sure that I will be attending many more in the future. Now, for those of you who are listening, if you have loved someone who loved, whom you loved, I have a question for you. Have you gone to see a medium and try and connect with your loved one? Chances are that you either have done so or have seriously considered doing so. I meet so many parents whose hearts have been made lighter, who have received so much comfort by meeting with a medium. And you know why? Because we miss our loved ones so much and we long to connect with them. So when we hear someone describe to us the exact personality traits of our loved one, we feel as if he or she is here with us, and we're reassured that our loved one is okay, and that is priceless. So one of the messages that I would like to share with you today is that we can feel the presence of our child, of our loved one in our lives all the time if only we learn to pay attention and learn to listen to our intuition. And I know this is hard to do because we're so used to using our minds. We're so used to being rational. And we're so used to only believing what we can see. But let me tell you that it is possible to continue to be a rational human being while at the same time taking steps to develop and nurture our intuition. Our intuition is for those of you who are wondering what intuition is a deep knowingness that bypasses our mind. It's something that you feel, not something that you know in your mind. So, and we are not really taught in society or growing up what our intuition is. the closest that we get to is when someone says, trust your gut. And that is our intuition. When they say, trust your gut, that is your intuition. It's something that you don't know where it comes from, but it feels like an unshakable knowingness that, you know, that this situation is not going to turn out well, or that you are in danger, or that this decision is not going to be good for you, or is the right decision for you. So learning to listen and trust our intuition is also something that can help us keep the connection with our loved one alive. But before we can do that, before we can go into developing and nurturing our intuition, we have to do something first. And this was really actually the subject of my show last week. The thing that we need to do first is that we need to kind of take some time alone to become aware of what kind of thoughts are we thinking and how they are making us feel. And then once we do that, we can begin to turn our thoughts from the negative to the positive. And I share with you, I was reading an old Reader's Digest magazine, and I'm just going to share with you a research that was done by Loyola University researchers who discovered that recalling good memories for just 20 minutes a day can make people feel more cheerful than they did the week before. And they're talking about just people, not someone who had lost a child, just someone who just by the just normal burdens of life is feeling down. So imagine what a difference will make for someone who is grieving to choose consciously to dwell on the positive memories that they share with their child rather than anything that is painful or that makes them sad. So I just wanted to share that with you because there's actually scientific evidence of how beneficial this is. But this week, though, I would like to discuss some facts about grief. We all have grief, whether we realize it or not. And the vast majority of us did not experience a perfect childhood and are grieving for the nurturing, the understanding, or the guidance that we did not receive growing up. We are carrying many childhood wounds and are not looking at them. Our inner child is suffering. However, we continue to live and function as if that were not the case. We ignore our inner child most of the time. And this ignoring takes a toll on us, but we persist on moving forward. And you know why? Because it's a lot of work and it makes us feel sad. It's so much easier to pretend that all is well or to overindulge in food or drink or drugs, in order to numb ourselves, in order to not feel our feelings, right? We can understand that. We can understand that. It's too painful to acknowledge those things. And I'm not saying these things in order to make you feel depressed or bad about yourself. No. I'm saying this because I want you to understand that when somebody we love dies, we pile up that grief, the grief that we have, that we already have, the grief of the loss from our loved one, we piled it over on top of the grief that we're already carrying from our inner child. And it is too much for us to bear. So I would say that losing a loved one is the last straw that broke the camel's back. It's debilitating, paralyzing, and unbearable. And I think that you would agree with me if you had lost a loved one, that's exactly how you feel, how we feel. But only if we allow ourselves to have the feelings come out to the surface, we can begin to heal. And I know many people who have gone on in life after a loss by squelching their feelings, by not talking about the loved one who passed on, by tuning everything that could be painful out. And those people apparently go on. But the truth of the matter is that it takes a huge toll on their health, on their relationships, on their mental well-being, and on their capacity to be present, you know, for life, you know, for their lives, for their work, for their relationships. So what can we do? Well, we need to go deep. We need to feel our feelings and release them in a healthy manner. And most importantly, and I find this point to be very crucial, we need to allow ourselves to feel all the wounds, all the disappointments of our inner child. Why? Why? Because if we are already grieving, we already are grieving big time with the loss of our loved one, why not open the floodgates and let all the grief come out? This is an opportunity for us to heal and to heal at a very deep level. And it's very hard for us to do that ourselves. We can go to a therapist, and the therapist will help us. Because part of the healing of the inner child, which is where we would start, part of the healing of the wounds of the inner child involves for us to offer compassion and understanding to our parents, to whoever raised us, and to the fact that they were doing the best that they could at that time. Their intention was not to wound us. Their intention was not to affect us negatively. They were doing the best that they could. But then now you have reached a point, or we have reached a point in our lives when we feel that it's time to go deep, it's time to get rid of, to get in touch with what wounds that we're carrying, what resentments, you know, what hurt feelings, so that we can do something about it, so that we can heal them. And then from then, move on to the feelings of grief over our loss. So how healed we are, and this is an important point, how healed we are is directly proportionate to how we function in our lives. And I'll tell you something, most parents give, give, and give until there's nothing left in them to give to themselves. And I'm a firm believer in this. As we heal the wounds of our inner child, we take big steps towards learning to offer love to ourselves, so that we are no longer the last ones on our list. Do you see how these are connected? We heal the wounds of our inner child, and then once we heal them, we begin to offer love to ourselves. We begin to take care of the needs that were unmet when we were children, and we begin to love ourselves. So we begin to feel, we begin to feel the fuel tank of our own love for ourselves. And this is important, and I'll tell you why in just a little bit. Because when we're grieving, we are exhausted. We are depleted. And we're vulnerable. However, we have others to take care of. And we do take care of them. We push ourselves to take care of them. But what about us? Who takes care of us? The answer is that until we go within to acknowledge the unmet needs of our inner child, to offer love and nurturing to ourselves, to offer compassion and to forgive our parents, grandparents, whoever raised us, you know, whoever hurt us in our childhood and in our, you know, adolescence, until we learn to do all this work, we cannot possibly offer a love that is unconditional, that does not have any requisites to others. So let me give you a personal example, because sometimes, you know, when someone tells us something, we get it, but we get it better when we have an example. So this is a personal example. Prior to my son Christopher's, prior to his diagnosis and his subsequent death, 3 years later, I thought I knew what love was. But I found out that I had only known conditional love, the love of, if you are a good daughter, I love you. If you go to school to study what I want you to study, I love you. If you don't embarrass me in any way, I love you. And you get the idea. You probably have your own experiences like that. But my son Christopher taught me that our children love us unconditionally with such a pure love. And it was as if a door had opened up for me when I realized this. And I thought, wow, I want to learn to offer this kind of love to my children, to my family, to my friends, and to myself. So he inspired me and he opened up my eyes. Have you? Who's listening to this show, have you given any thought to this? To the notion you have about what love is? How about to what the media, the movies, the TV shows, the magazines, what they tell you that love is. Don't you feel that there's a huge, huge emphasis put on romantic love as if that is all the love that is? And romantic love is, by definition, conditional love. The conditions being faithfulness, trust, telling the truth, loyalty. It's conditional. These are conditional. With the parents' love for us, it's conditional as well. They have expectations. But our children, have you noticed how our children love us no matter what? They forgive us when we just say, I'm so sorry, I lost my temper with you today. And they forgive us instantly. And they they're just a little ball of love. That, if we connect with that on a daily basis and we make the connection between conditional versus unconditional and try to strive to begin to give unconditional love to ourselves, what a change it'll happen in our lives. It happened in my life. It completely, that realization alone completely changed my life. So I encourage you to take some quiet time to think about this. And this is tied in to the whole inner child wounds. Because basically, in order to get to the point where we can offer unconditional love to ourselves, we need to begin by looking at those wounds. We need to begin by healing those wounds. We need to begin by forgiving those who have hurt us, by offering understanding and compassion. And then from there, we can begin to offer love to ourselves and acceptance. And then after we do that, we can really offer unconditional love to others with no strings attached. They don't have to respond well to what we do. They don't have to accept what we offer. We just love, love and love. So all this talk about love came about because I wanted to raise the point that one of the reasons our grief after losing a loved one takes such a toll on us is that it comes on top of the wounds of our inner child, which we have been caring for a long, long time and probably have stashed them away to the side and have not acknowledged. The wounds of our inner child usually come out very forcefully when we are in our romantic relationships. You know, have you heard that expression? You know, you push a button. That button is something that is usually, not always, but usually connected to the wounds from our inner child that we received when we were kids, you know. So we can choose to go deep and unearth those wounds so that we can offer ourselves the love we did not receive as children, as teenagers, as young adults, and heal that part. And in doing so, we can begin to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of others without it taking a huge toll on us. It won't be such an effort. If we're taking care of ourselves, if we're loving ourselves, if we have good boundaries and we're able to say, you know, let's say, Billy, you want me to take you to the shopping mall tonight, but you know what? I would like to take you too, but I'm exhausted. I'm depleted from my work, and I don't have the energy to do that. How about if I take you tomorrow? That is loving towards yourself. That is having healthy boundaries. Your child will understand, and not only will your child understand, or your loved one, it could be your spouse, it could be a friend, not only will they understand, but if it is your child that you're doing this with, or if it is your spouse that you're doing this with, they will begin to get out of themselves to connect with the fact that you also have needs. And they will be definitely taking those into account in the future. So you model for them self-care. Okay? And they may be able to use that in their for themselves. So I came across a quote by Karen Bakurian, and she says this: acknowledge your inner child. Even though we have found the light in ourselves today, we sometimes forget to heal all wounds of our past. Your inner child still needs to be loved in order to heal the complete self. And you see, this is what I'm talking about. We have the opportunity when we have lost someone to heal not just from that wound, not just from that loss, but to heal the complete self, and that includes your inner child. And this is what we want. I think that deep in our hearts, whether we realize it or not, this is what we want. We want to complete the, we want to heal the complete self. And so we can only do that by beginning with the wounds of our inner child. This is something that is discussed in one of the chapters in my book, Know Your Usual Grief book. And I talk about how important it is to replenish ourselves when we're grieving before we can do anything for others. And I go into deeper, into more detail in my book. But I definitely felt it was important to include it in there. Now, let's just talk about society, about grief, and about how it affects those who are grieving. Let me just go ahead and say it. This is a death-denying society that we're living in. This makes it difficult for those who are grieving. Why? Because people are not aware. They are not taught. They are not comfortable being around or talking with those who have experienced a loss. I don't know how many parents have told me horrible and insensitive comments that were made to them after their loss, or how their friends and family avoided mentioning their child or their loved one because they did not want to make them feel sad. The truth of the matter is that those who are grieving, especially parents, want to talk about their loved one, want to validate that they existed, that their lives matter, and that they left a legacy of love. But there is no one teaching us how to do this in society. There is, however, lots of teaching involved in how to bring a child into the world, but not in how to help someone who is dying so that their end will be peaceful, loving, and dignified. And I don't know why there is such a taboo, you know, and why as a society we have chosen to just, you know, turn our heads towards the need that we have to help and to help those who are grieving and to educate those who are around them so that they don't add to their grief. Of course, the family and the friends that make these comments, they don't realize what they're doing. Some of them, they're just nervous and being around you. They don't know what to say, and they may blurt out something that, you know, didn't make any sense, and they had no idea that it was going to hurt us. But it's not fair to those who are grieving, even if it's not intentional. They deserve, all of us who are grieving, deserve to live in a society that teaches all of us how to support the ones who are grieving, what to say, what not to say, what to do and what not to do. Don't you think it's so extremely hard to believe in this day and age that we still don't have that? We are making little by little a few strides, but not enough. I shake my head every once in a while when I remember how lacking we are as a society in this area. And this is in the United States. In the Latin culture, I'm originally from Venezuela, the Latin culture is even worse. Even worse, the denial and the inability to talk and to, at least in Venezuela, it's this way. It may not be in other places. And I'm thinking about like the Festival of the Dead that they have in Mexico. That's definitely much more, you know, much more advanced, I would say, that it is in Venezuela, but we don't have anything like that. And there's not really a level of comfort. There's not any guidance given to children when a loved one is dying. And here, also, we're lacking in that. We totally are. So one of the things that we would like to discuss today is how to help ourselves when we're grieving. I would like to share with you some of the tools that I recommend to those who are grieving. If you're a grieving parent, the first thing that I recommend is for you to decide ahead of time how you're going to handle the inevitable question of how many children you have. This is a very, very difficult question to receive when you have lost a child. So it makes it easier if we decide ahead of time, you know, with whom you are going to be sharing the fact that you lost a child and with whom you're not going to share it. If you have lost a spouse, a brother or sister, a parent, it also helps to decide with whom you want to share about your loss, especially if talking about it will bring about an unwanted outburst of tears. So I've had work with parents who, after the loss, I have a particular family in mind who they lost their only child, a young baby, and they decided ahead of time, from the moment, you know, shortly after she died, that they were not going to share. If the people ask them how many children you have or do you have any children, they would say none. No, we don't have any children, if it was a stranger. If it was someone that they were going to continue to be in relationship with, to associate or to see, then they would say, yes, we had one child and she died. So that's the first thing to do, to decide so that you can be prepared for how you're going to handle it. Another thing that is important is that of our expectation. The truth of the matter is that, remember that I mentioned before that our society does not prepare us to deal with those who are grieving? Well, because of this, we, the grieving, need to adjust our expectations accordingly. And what this means is that, and I know that this is hard for us to accept, it was for me, life goes on for other people as if nothing had happened. And we can't expect that they will ever fully understand how our lives have been so affected by our loss, how shattered we are, how immobilized we are, how heartbroken we are. And the reason that I mentioned this is that we will suffer a lot if we expect otherwise, if we expect them to understand, you know, fully what's happened, if we expect them to just always say the right things or to always be for there or to not talk about their other children or their spouse or, you know, whoever it is that corresponds to the loved one that we have lost, we are, you know, we are setting ourselves up for having additional suffering. And believe me, I speak from personal experience, because I cried rivers of tears because of the hurtful behavior and comments from friends and family members after the death of Christopher. But in time, I came to realize that these people did not mean to hurt me. They didn't mean to. No. They just didn't know how to behave themselves around me. And because of the nervousness, sometimes they talked about lighthearted things, which may have hurt me, or they may have made jokes, but they did not mean it. So it was important that I was able to forgive and forget about those things. But let me tell you, it took a toll on me. Because you know what? It's not fair that we, the ones who are grieving, we, the ones who are hurting, have to reach out from our depleted state to offer understanding to others, to offer understanding that, well, they didn't mean it. It takes a toll on us. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't. However, this is how it is still. Hopefully it won't be like that, you know, a few years from now. So it's important to know, to prepare ourselves, to adjust our expectations, to realize that we can't expect people to fully understand, that they may say things that, you know, hurt us. They may do things that hurt us. And we just need to realize they don't know what they're doing. They don't mean it. And we just need to go forward, surround ourselves with those people who do understand, which could be other parents, you know, joining a support group, a group like, you know, like there are many on Facebook and online, like Compassionate Friends, which is comprised by only those parents, other parents who have lost a child. That is a perfect group to provide you with the understanding that you need to kind of like give you a protective cocoon with that understanding and with that comfort that you may not receive from the world out there, because the world out there is not able to. They would like to be able to support you, but they can't. So it would be great if we got to the point where we have a society where death is not a taboo subject and proper attention and education is provided to all of us, so that those who are grieving are not inflicted further pain on top of the pain of their loss. So don't you agree with this? Haven't you given some thought to this as well? It's just not right. But hopefully little by little, we'll continue as a society to make baby steps towards a better situation, better support, better understanding, better education to all society. Okay, so that was the second tool. The first one had to do with deciding how to answer the question, how many children you have, or do you have any children, or if you are a widow, you know, who are you married, or, you know, how many brothers and sisters you have, if you have lost a brother or sister. The second tool is the expectation adjuster, and which is to adjust our expectations to accept fully the fact that unless you're talking with someone who also has lost a child or has experienced a similar loss, you can pretty much know that you won't receive the understanding and the support that you need from others. So now this next tool that is helpful for us to handle ourselves when we're grieving in social situations, which we know are extremely painful. It's so painful to go out in the world after we have suffered a significant loss. And the truth of the matter is that we receive tremendous pressure from people. There is also a lot of judgment sometimes. I mean, it may not be for everybody, but I do hear from lots of parents who tell me that they are just feeling so judged by friends, and particularly friends, but sometimes even family, for staying inside. But they need that. They need that level of protection. They're very vulnerable. We, when we're grieving, need to protect our vulnerability. And if we're not ready to go outside and be in social situations, then we have to honor that. That's part of offering love to ourselves, right? So it's so hard for grieving parents and for grieving anyone who is grieving to face. And so it's important to give yourself however time is necessary until you feel that you are ready. But it's also helpful to have some tools, a little toolkit where you are prepared to face the world after a loss. And so the next one is that when we are in a social situation, and let's say that somebody says something that is just extremely painful to you, that it just makes you, like, it starts a huge wave of grief inside of you, whatever it is that person said, and you're going to start crying, sobbing, and you don't want to do that in a social setting, then it's important for you to have already, before you leave the door, before you leave your house, already have in hand an excuse, you know, for you to get out of that situation. And so it could be something like, I forgot that I need to go home as soon as possible to help my son with an important project, you know, or anything like that. I forgot that it's just, you know, something that I need to do, and I'm sorry that I had to go, and you don't have to give any details. And it may sound extreme to you who are listening to leave, to have to come up with something already that you don't have to be thinking of when you are in the middle of your distress. But let me tell you, it really can help you, because the truth of the matter is that you will find yourself in circumstances like that, even months after the death of your child. Something could just trigger a very, very painful episode for you, and you need to be prepared, or you don't need to, but it will be helpful for you to have that in mind, prepared. And if it is not you, if you are with your husband or your partner or your boyfriend or your sister or your mother, then one of you had to have that prepared so that you can just say, hey, I had to go, and they can make the excuse for you. And that will be even better if you are not by yourself in that social situation that we're talking about. So you will be surprised to find out how many times a parent has told me that someone from their family or a friend, this is the next tool, actually, that I'm going to. You will be surprised to find out how many times a parent has told me that someone from their family or a friend has tried to kind of overtake the plans for the celebration of the first anniversary of their loved one. It's very hard to believe this, right? It was to me the first time a parent told me this. But one of the things that you can do to avoid this from happening is to take some time alone to think through exactly how you want to spend that day. And it can be the day of the celebration, but it could also be holiday, any holiday, particularly the first year, any holiday, the birthday of your child or of your loved one, the anniversary of their death. These are sacred days. They are sacred, and they deserve for you, or you deserve to do exactly what you and your family wish, not what anyone else wishes. So this is not a time for you to be trying to please others. No, this is your grief. This is your child. This is your loved one. So give yourself permission to think through and design exactly who you want to have around you on that day. What do you want to do? Where do you want to be? What kind of activities do you want to do? Or whether you don't want to do anything and just be like a little couch potato watching movies all day, you know, whatever it may be, but whatever that you need needs to be honored during those special occasions, okay? So be ready. If anybody tries to say, you know, when you do this, you say, you know, I'm thinking about it and I will know and I have it. I got this, okay? Thank you, but no thank you, okay? Now, the last tool that I want to mention to you for those who are grieving and venture out into the world, into a social situation, is to make sure you have a safety net. And by this, I mean a couple of trusted friends or family members whom you can count on to be there for you. Come what may. For example, you may be at a get-together with friends and something happens that makes you feel uncomfortable, the same situation as before, or terribly sad, and you need to either leave immediately. It may be that you don't need to leave immediately, but it may be that you need to talk with someone immediately. So it could be even that you're not out of your home. Suppose that you were just talking on the phone. A friend of yours calls you on the phone, and you're talking with her, and what she said just completely just touched, you know, just made your heart sore, and you made you angry, and you're so upset, and you're sobbing, and you need to talk with somebody, but your spouse is at work, and you don't have anybody around you, you're by yourself in the house, and so have a safety net of friends, someone that you can talk, that will pick up the phone, and will help you in a situation like that. So you can actually have it formally. You can talk with them and say, I need someone that can, you know, answer the phone for me when I'm in a situation like this. And if I'm alone in a social situation and I need somebody to pick me up no matter what time, and I don't have anybody, my family cannot do it, can you be at the ready for me? Can I count on you? It's important to do this. To not leave it at just leave it to the circumstances. No, be proactive about it and be prepared for this. This is a toolkit that can be very helpful for those who are grieving, and it's a way of taking care of ourselves. It's the way of saying, I want to take care of my feelings. I recognize that I am really, really vulnerable right now, and that I don't want to suffer more than I need to be. And in social situations, it is likely that things could happen that upset me, and I want to make sure that I have the support that I need and I have the tools at hand to help myself. So these tools that I have been talking about, they're only suggestions. But if you choose to use them, they can make a difference in how you feel when you go out after your loss. They truly can. Because being prepared to face society can greatly diminish your fears and your anxiety about going back into the world after, while you're grieving. So I'm going to share with you some of the things that my clients have shared with me. So this is one of my clients. Possibly the hardest thing for parents to deal with socially is when someone asks them the question, how many children do you have? It's heart-wrenching because you may be having an okay day, by which I mean a day when you're not crying constantly, and all of a sudden you hear those words and you're reminded once again of your huge loss. So you begin to think, I don't want to deny that my child existed. So I will tell her that I have 2 children. All is good, right? No, because then they asked me. So this was a mother who had 3 children, and her oldest child had recently passed away. And so she was asked, how many children do you have? And so she thought, I'm just going to tell her that I have 2 children. But then the person asked, what school do they go to? So then she had to come clean and tell them that she had only 1 child who's living. She had 1 child who passed away and 2 who were living. And she said that the worst part is that when she came clean and she said that, was watching her face, the face of the person who asked the question, give her such a look of pity as she struggled to come up with what to say to her. So she says, it's not worth it to share the fact that your child has died with just anybody. Save it for those. So save it for those. Save the sharing of your loss with those with whom you will continue to be in contact. So her encouragement was to not share it with strangers. So that's what my client said. Another client said that, she said this, I suffered so much at the beginning because I thought that people would understand that losing my child was a devastating loss for me, and that they would not be saying things such as, it's time for you to pull yourself together, to exercise, to go back to work. It hurt me, my feelings tremendously to have anyone say those things to me because it made me feel so alone, so alienated from the world and its people. So this validates what one of the tools that I said, that when people will say things, not because they're mean, and they don't mean those things, not because they want to hurt us, but because they don't know, because they haven't been taught as a society. Another client shared this with me. She said, I'm still so very upset with my mother-in-law for trying to take over the planning for the anniversary of my daughter's death. I could not believe that she did not seem to realize that this was my job, my child, my plans. And even though my daughter was her grandchild, she was my child first. So to have to reach from my depleted and sad state to tell her in no uncertain terms that she needed to step aside and let me take care of the arrangements was very difficult for me. But I realized that I needed to respect my needs at that time. Very, very, very hard. Very, very hard for her to do this. But she had to. It was important for her to do that. And don't you agree? Another client of mine put it this way. She said, I could not have made it through the first year after the death of my son if it had not been for my dear friends, Anne and Teresa. They were available to me at whichever hour of the day or night to console me, listen to me, or even to pick me up from the grocery store one day when I had a breakdown after being reminded of my child. If they had not been there for me, I don't know what would have happened, because even though I had my husband and family, they couldn't always be there for me. They were also grieving, and they needed help themselves. So one of the many difficulties those who are grieving encounter in social situations is the fact that they feel so different from who they were before their loss, that they feel that they no longer fit in. Let me give you an example. Their interests may have changed greatly. I know of a mother who used to love shopping a lot before her loss, but afterwards, she lost all desire to buy material things. She said to me that she now placed more value on relationships and time spent with those she loves rather than on buying things. So because of this, she couldn't relate any longer to her shopaholic friends, and those relationships fizzled as a result. It is very, very difficult for us to accept and to adapt to the many changes that we have undergone as a result of our loss. There are times when we wish we were still the same. Yes, I feel that. I wish everything that I have learned and everything that I have grown, give that up if I were to have my son back with me again. And I know that this resonates with anybody who had lost a loved one. However, we know deep down inside, even though we wish that things were still the same, we definitely know deep down inside that the changes that we have gone through because of our experiences are here to stay, and that we must take time to get to know the new selves that have emerged as a result of our loss. Who are we now? And why is it important for us to figure out how much we have changed and who we are so that we can find the right coping skills to help us deal with life as we know it? And I dedicated a chapter in my book, Know Your Usual Grief Book, How to Heal While Connecting with Your Child Who Died, to this, to the old you versus the new you, to helping those who are reading figure that out so that they can find the right coping skills to help us deal with life as we know it now. Because if we don't do this, we'll continue to use the coping skills we were using before that worked with the person that we were before. But we're different now. We have changed tremendously. And so we need different coping skills to help us at this time. Okay? I hope that this makes sense to you. So I want to summarize today's show. I talked about how for those who are grieving, sometimes it is extremely healing and comforting to their heart to see a medium or a psychic, because it helps us who are grieving feel connected to the person who died. And that is important. I also reiterated the message from last week that we can nurture the connection that we have with our loved ones by learning to listen and trust in our intuition. But before we can do that, we need to pay attention to the thoughts that we're holding moment to moment so that we can release them and change them from negative to positive. And in that way, we can experience some relief moment to moment. Then I went on to talk about whether we have lost a loved one or not, we all carry the grief of our childhood wounds, the grief of our inner child. And I discussed that when we lose a loved one, that grief, the grief of that loss, is piled on top of the wounds of our inner child. And that makes it unbearable for us to function. It's too much of a burden. So that if we had been squelching and not facing the wounds of our childhood, like most of us do, because it's too painful, unless we choose to go to therapy and face those. But when we add to that the grief over the loss of a loved one, we crumble, we stumble, we don't know how to go on. And this is the place where we find ourselves after the loss of a loved one. I talked also about how important it is to attend to the unmet needs and the wounds of our inner child. Because when we begin to heal those wounds and begin to offer love to ourselves, then we take a giant step towards our own healing. And when we, the more that we love ourselves and take care of ourselves, the more we can take care of others, and the more unconditionally we can love others. I also talked about the difference between conditional and unconditional love, and how my son Christopher made me aware of the fact that he and my other children were the only ones who have loved me unconditionally. I encourage anyone who's listening to this show right now to take some time to reflect, to kind of sift through the messages about love that they have received throughout their lives. And also the messages about love that are ever present in our music, in the advertisements, in the TV commercials, in the shows, in the books that you read, in the magazines that you read, so that you will see that the scales are tipped, you know, towards love being mostly romantic love. But romantic love is, by its definition, is conditional. There are conditions to the love that we share romantically. And so I encourage you to think deeper, to go deeper into what love is and what conditional versus unconditional love. And for experiencing what unconditional love is, all you have to do is look at and get in touch with the feeling that you receive, with the way that your children love you, because it is unconditional. And I went on to share 5 tools that can help all of us who are grieving manage ourselves in social situations. So the first one was the expectation adjuster, which had to do with how to accept the fact that we can't expect anyone other than someone who has also had the same experience of loss that you had had to fully understand and to say the things that you need to hear to you, to behave the way that you need for people, those around you, to behave. You cannot expect society at large to offer you that support and understanding. And when you accept that, you suffer less when people say things that are not helpful to you. Okay? The second tool was the answer pre-calculator, and that was to already think ahead of how you're going to answer people when they ask you if you have lost a child, how many children do you have, or do you have any children? And if you have lost a spouse, you know, are you married, you know, or not? If you have lost a brother or sister, how many brothers or sisters you have? Have an answer prepared, and you may choose to only share your loss with those people that you're going to be continuing to be in contact with and to not share your loss with strangers. The quick draw escape saw is the next tool, which is for you to have an excuse at the ready, just on hand, already pre-made before you go to whatever social situation you're going to be in, so that if something happens and you feel that you cannot deal with being in that social situation any longer, you can give that excuse, state it firmly. There's no room for anything other than accepting your excuse so you can leave. The next one, the fourth tool, is a special date organizer, which means that you have the right to spend any holidays, anniversaries, birthdays of the loved one, of your loved one, in any way that you choose to, and to not allow anybody else to try to sabotage or try to put in and do what they wish to do. Okay, so this is for you. It's a sacred. These are sacred days. They're very, very difficult for you. So you deserve, you who are grieving, deserve to spend them in the way that you choose to, in the place that you want to, with the people that you want to, doing the things that you want to. And the last one is the safety net, which is to have 1 or 2 very close friends or family members that you can count on to ask any questions, to listen to you when you're sobbing and you need to talk to somebody because you're very angry, something happened, somebody made you angry, or maybe even pick you up from wherever you're at if your family is not available so that you can go home, okay? So the last thing that I discussed was the fact that when we lose someone, we're changed in a big way. And that makes us feel different from who we were before. And this affects how we feel in social situations. We don't feel that we fit in anymore. So as a result of our change, we may lose friendships because our interests and activities may have changed. And this is normal and part of the process of grief. So now I want to, since you know I'm an angel intuitive, And I am going to right now just draw a card. Right now I'm shuffling the cards. It's a deck called Messages from the Angels. And to leave you with a message this week that will bring solace to your heart. Okay? So as soon as I draw the card. Okay. Okay, the card is from Angel Akasha, and he says, "You are a spiritual teacher. You have the ability to counsel others and help them awaken their spiritual gifts and divine life mission." So what she's saying is, if you have nothing, what she's saying is that nothing happens, or there is always a reason to everything that happens, okay? So the loss that you have experienced, if you are someone who is grieving, listening to this, is an opportunity for us to grow spiritually. And after we have done, are growing by absorbing all the lessons that we have learned from our loss, then we can find a way to make a difference in the world. And sometimes these things that happen, these losses, are wake-up calls to all of us that we may have been letting life leave us instead of living our life fully and finding what our divine life mission is. So if you would like to talk to me and find out if I can be of help to you, there are several ways in which you can contact me. You can email me at Selene, S-E-L-E-N-E, Negrete, N-E-G-R-E-T-T-E, author, at yahoo.com. You can also go to my website, www.notyourusualgriefbook.com. And there you can find the link to purchase my book if you wish to do that. And you can also find out more about what I do and schedule a phone call with me. And the other thing that you can do is you can message me on my Facebook page, which is Selene Negrete Author. And I thank you, if you're listening to my show, I thank you for your time, because I know time is of the essence. And I also know that when we're grieving, we are depleted, and it takes a lot for us to listen to a one-hour show. I appreciate you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I will be looking forward to connecting with you again next week on Thursday from 10 in the morning till 11. Blessings to you this week. And I will see you next Thursday. Take care.